Welcome to Limitless, the Blind Beginnings podcast where we discuss tips, tricks, and current topics related to all things in the blind and partially sighted community. Now, it is my pleasure to introduce the founder of Blind Beginnings and your host, Sean Marcellet, and whatever co-host is on this week. Now, here's your host, Sean.
Welcome back to Limitless, the Blind Beginnings podcast. I'm your host, Sean Marcellet. If you did not catch our episode last week, you're going to want to listen to that one first. We had an amazing conversation about the difference between being born blind and losing your vision later on in life. And we had several guests. We had Brody, Jill, Nika, and Randy. And our conversation was very engaging and went on far too long for one episode. So we have broken it up into two episodes. And here is the second half. So let's talk about some of the skills that we've had to learn, some of the blindness related skills or just skills in general. One that comes to mind for me is cooking. Maybe we'll start with you, Brody. What was it like? I'm assuming you knew how to cook before you lost your vision.
Yeah, I did. I grew up with a stepdad who was a chef, opened up a couple restaurants and stuff. So I did like the kitchen.
Oh, wow. And so what was it like having to learn that, you know, do that without vision?
The meals got a little bit more, less satisfying, I guess. No, I don't know. It was a little bit of a shock, too. So, you know, I moved just the year we moved into a different apartment, and there was a gas stove, which is kind of a little bit, before we had just electric ones. So I was kind of, you know, dealing with that stuff too. I could make breakfast, lunch, dinner kind of thing. And even when my friends and stuff would come over, it would, you know, let's whip up something instead of order or whatever, but, you know, sometimes we'd still order out, but yeah, I did a couple workshops at CNIB, you know, put the markers on around the kitchen, you know, of course now with all the new appliances, they're all touchscreen and stuff. So there's no real, markers or anything like that. So it was definitely a shock for sure. I kind of, you know, gave in a little bit and let everyone else kind of help. And, you know, everyone was eager to help. My girlfriend, my stepdad I lived with at the time, and my mom and stuff like that. So I was kind of just let go and, you know, didn't cook for a while, you know, only maybe bring myself something for breakfast and something nice and easy, you know, to put in the microwave or whatever it was. And, or, try and, you know, make an egg or something like that, you know, end up burning it or something, just get frustrated because I have to be so close. Looking up so my blind spot moves away, and then, you know, using my smell or something, you know, waiting for that burn smell or whatever it was. But yeah, so, and then, you know, using the different utensils and stuff that were really, you know, identify with markers and stuff like that. And, you know, just taking my time too. I'd have to, like, before I was whipping around, you know, like, Emeril Lagasse and, you know, making a big mess in the kitchen and stuff. But no, now it's just having to kind of slow down and take my time with things. And, or if I was cooking, it was like, you know, it's, you know, before I liked medium rare steak, well, now it's going to be well done. Right. So, but yeah, or, you know, stuff like that, like that, you just kind of resorted to a lot of microwave kind of stuff at the very first, a couple of years, and, you know, oven stuff. And, you know, I didn't really want to venture onto the barbecue again and stuff like that. So, some of the meals that I kind of enjoyed at first, you know, making a pizza or stuff, I'd have to definitely have someone with me, you know, make sure everything was going good and stuff like that. Or, you know, if I was cutting vegetables and, you know, maybe I didn't see that, you know, moldy chunk or something, right? And didn't, you know, feel that, you know, very good to identify that stuff. So just stuff like that, or, you know, maybe cut something or do whatever, you know, I shouldn't have done, right? And make the mistake of blending the fresh packet, you know, from the protein powder in my drink or something, right? So it was definitely a shock for sure. It was a little bit of a stepping stone and like having to not learn things again, but take some steps back and then kind of make sure I'm doing everything careful and slow and make sure I don't hurt myself and make sure things aren't raw or things are cooked properly, right? So But now it sucks to skip the dishes, so it's just so convenient.
So something like chopping vegetables, I'm guessing you were good fast before. Over time, yeah, since losing your vision, have you sped up again? Like, is that, do you feel like you're working your way back to where you were, or do you feel like you'll always be slower?
Yeah, no, it's actually the first couple of years for sure was a little bit of a change, but it's kind of come back to normal, and it's nice to even doing other things, you know, if it's not chopping or anything like that, but like I can actually, if someone's at the island, or I could like look their way, obviously not make eye contact, but look their way while I'm doing things. And people are just kind of just amazed that way, where they have to be right away looking at everything, and their hind, you know, hand-eye coordination. There's me, I'm just kind of looking at their direction, you know, stirring this or doing that. And it's like I told people who are dealing with the same eye condition and with some other support stuff that I was helping, you know, it's, you got to have the confidence of the vision you have, and then you got to use your eyes as like, or your, sorry, your hands as your eyes, right? And that's what I was saying, like, I'm not gonna, you know, so I just definitely have all the faith with that, and just picturing everything too in my head too, which is kind of the key thing for myself. But yeah.
Yes, that's a good point. You can picture because you saw before. So yeah, in some ways, yeah, that might help you in a way that for someone who's never seen wouldn't have that advantage. Like, you've learned to use your hands instead of your eyes. I think that's a big shift that can happen when you're low vision, right? Where that you're struggling to see to do something. And then you all of a sudden at some point realize, I don't actually have to see to do this. I can do it in a more tactile way that's actually more efficient and faster.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Nika, just listening to Brody and the way he's described his cooking journey, how does that compare to yours, learning to cook?
So my cooking journey is kind of non-existent, really. I'm fine with things in the kitchen, but then once heat starts getting involved, that's kind of when I run out in a panic. But like, you know, I'm fine like making basic things like breakfast, making chia seed pudding or like a fruit parfait is fine, sandwich, salads, that kind of thing, wraps. But even with like baking, I love baking. I do the actual like mixing the ingredients part. I just can't do the putting it in the oven part.
Jill, you're our expert baker, kitchen person at Blind Beginnings now.
Guess so.
How is life, like, how much did you know before you lost all your vision?
Yeah. So I, we'd always come home after school and, like, make our own snacks, whether it was, like, I don't know, sandwich or, like, soup or whatever, like, just whatever we found in the cupboard or fridge, basically, we would make for a snack because there were five or six of us. So we all kind of shared whatever was made. So I didn't cook a whole meal really myself because I was like 14, 15. So I wasn't really interested yet, but kind of a rule in our house was you help make the meal. So we each had like a certain part, right? And when I could see, I could look around. Like I looked just like my sighted siblings, like, there was nothing obviously differentiating me from them, like visually impaired wise. So like, it was never a thought about cooking. Like they taught me the same way they taught my sighted siblings. And like, if I had to get closer, that was maybe the only thing I had to do differently. So when I lost my sight, like the same kind of rule applied where we all would help cook a meal, especially at my dad's house where he was like the single parent and stuff. But he wouldn't let me help at all. He's terrified of me touching a knife. Unless like he wouldn't let me even grate cheese. Like he was just so scared of it because it was such a different, like it was so instantly different how I had to do stuff, right? But again, I was very determined and maybe a little stubborn. So I really wanted to learn to cook, and I had a really good independent living skills instructor who, he's a really, really good cook. So he mainly taught me everything that I know and have kind of taught Blind Beginnings stuff now. A lot of it was for him, but there is definitely a lot of situations where like pouring a glass of like milk or juice or something, I could see when to stop pouring. Right. So that was, and I, the liquid level indicator annoyed me. I didn't like it. Mm-hmm. Because it only filled the cup up halfway, and I thought that was dumb.
Yes. So
I didn't want to use it. And there was like an instance where I was at like our like I guess like it was like the life skills kitchen at my high school, and the other visually impaired girl that I met later on, who like she's a couple years older than I was, it was just her and I in the room, and for whatever reason we were pouring milk. I don't know why, but she was teaching me this. But she didn't explain like the finger on the side of the cup thing. Mm-hmm. And I just like figured I would know when to stop, right? Like I was getting full, whatever. But there were papers on the table and the cup overflowed and got all over the papers and ruined the papers. And it was really embarrassing and like just really awkward. And like, so like those were certain things like learning how to pour something and learning, like I don't need to get close down to look at it to do stuff anymore. Because when I would cook and see, I got really close to it. Like not like excessively close, but like decently close, or like more eye level to things, mm-hmm. as where like I don't need to do that now because I can't see it. So what's the point? So getting out of that habit of just getting closer, I guess, and like even cutting up vegetables and stuff, like that was something I could see where my fingers were and where the knife was to not, you know, cut myself. But after losing my sight, I couldn't see any of that anymore. So like I remember someone saying like, you're holding the knife so tight, your knuckles are white. Like, I remember someone making a comment like that because I was so nervous of, like, the knife slipping or something like that. Mm-hmm. But I had also had life skills with that instructor, like, once a week for about three years. So and that was something I really wanted to learn because I loved cooking and I loved, like, just, like, creating something that like that out of which I was really into it. So I was really determined to learn it. And the heat was something that scared me, kind of like what Nika had mentioned. But he had kind of oriented me to the oven and stove and everything before we turned it on. So I knew kind of where to aim with the cookie sheet, and I knew where the racks were and everything. So the heat was just something I like kind of freaked out and did it. And then I was excited because I did it afterwards. It was just kind of like I just had to force myself to do it. And now I cook and bake all the time. So I definitely embraced that a lot more than I expected to. So, yeah.
I'm curious, Randy, did you learn kind of non-visual ways of cooking from your mom?
I think certain things, yes. Other things, no. So I did grow up, you know, helping mom in the kitchen at different times. It wasn't a requirement, but we would often, you know, I often help with dinner, or like, here, chop this while I do this, or, you know, we'd bake cookies and Rice Krispie squares and stuff like that together. I think Rice Krispie squares is the one thing I don't have to even look at a recipe for ever. Mm-hmm. So we did it so much. And my mom does have a lot of her recipes either memorized, or she had certain cookbooks and she used a Max closed circuit TV. So it was kind of like a computer mouse with a camera inside, and then it plugged into a TV so that it would magnify the print for her. But you're only getting, like, depending on the setting of magnification, you know, one, maybe two words at a time as you're going across the page.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it was more so reminding herself of things. Mm. But there's definitely some things where, like, in regards to like chopping vegetables, and I mean, most things, but especially vegetables, she's always kept her nails quite long on her, especially her left hand, because those, like, I don't know how to describe it, but it's kind of like a way of chopping where you're holding the item so that, like, the knife's, like, your nails are kind of pointing straight down and your knife kind of goes, like, right against them okay. as you're chopping. And so you can kind of feel where your knife blade is, and if it were to, you know, if you did misjudge a little bit, it'll get take off, you know, a bit of the fingernail, not a bit of the fingertip.
Right.
So it's a good idea.
Randy, yeah, was your kitchen labeled growing up? Like, did you have like
yeah,
stickers
so that's
and
another
stuff?
Thing too. I don't remember when I was really young, but there was definitely at some point where All the stove knobs ended up with a sticker, and you can either get specific ones from CNIB and places like that, or you can just use other ones. You can get, I've used some like dollar store little gem kind of stick on things for my kitchen here. But all the kitchen all the stove knobs would have a marker at the very top, kind of like 12 o'clock. Mm-hmm. And some of them would have ones around 400 degrees kind of thing. And then my mom would kind of know like a little bit up or a little bit down, depending on what temperature she wanted. The microwave had dots on it for not every single number, but I think it might've been like the power button and the 5 and maybe the cancel kind of thing, or the 0 or something like that. So that's definitely some stuff where when I went to anybody else's house, it was kind of like, oh, your microwave doesn't have little tactile dots. I mean, I could still use it, but it's not that it surprised me per se, but I kind of was just so used to it. And it, like, I noticed the absence of it under my fingers. Yeah. But I do think I cook in a primarily sighted way now, I definitely prefer to have good lighting on and everything. Whereas a lot of the time, if I'm at home and it's getting dark in the evening, I don't necessarily bother to turn a light on because I don't need to. I can get around without light at all. Particularly days like today where I've had a migraine for the most of the day. So I want all the curtains closed, all the lights off, and I just, walk around the house, no problem. But I can, chop things, not with huge levels of speed, but I can do it without looking. I definitely use my fingers in testing things, like how done is a noodle, and when I've been asked by other people, when I was helping them learn to cook, I'm kind of like, I don't know how else to tell you to test the doneness. We've just always done it with our fingers. Because they were worried about burning themselves on the hot noodle. And I was like, if you can think of another way to test it, you're welcome to, but this is the only way I know how to test if it's done. You pick it up and you eat it.
Yes.
That's what I did. Something where if you pick it up and throw it at the cupboard, it sticks, it's done.
Yeah, I've heard that.
It works. True. It actually works. It's
but true. Then you have to feel around on the cupboard to see if it's stuck there or not. And
that's why we did that with my dad, and then we went to my mom's house and she got mad when we tried.
Yeah, my mom would not let
me do that. But my dad didn't care as much.
Funny side note with that, I remember reading a book as a child. I don't remember what the book was called, but they had, one of the families in this story had what they called the spaghetti wall. And they would, just like throw noodles at it for every time they cooked pasta.
Really fun.
Leave it there. It would all dry hard. They'd paint over it and start again.
Dude, no.
That's bizarre.
Well, it's funny too, because it's interesting because when I grew up low vision, we had nothing labeled in like the stove or the microwave or anything, and nothing was labeled because I could just get really close to it and see it, just, and that was all I really knew. Mm-hmm. So when I lost my sight, they're like, oh, I'm like, how am I supposed to use all this now? It's all like touch screen, and like, how do I know where to turn like the burner dial to a certain way? Like, I don't know any of that. So that was a big adjustment. Now I have stickers literally everywhere in my house for different labels. So I adjusted well to that one.
Let's talk family. Randy, do you want to take on this question?
Sure. Although your, background as a counselor and psychology and all of that might be really interesting here too. But I was kind of wondering, I've mentioned a bit of my backstory. I have a mom with the same condition. We kind of expected it. So there were certain things we did to prepare me for life, basically. I'm wondering if you guys, if things were expected, what did your, the people around you do as, to gear towards that? If your vision loss wasn't expected, obviously that's impacted you greatly, but it's also going to have impacted the people around you, and especially your family. And I'm wondering how, what impact that had, maybe how they dealt with it, if they had a hard time or an easy time, and how they supported you guys through that.
So I think, like I said before, even though I was low vision, there's nothing, it wasn't, something that we always thought of. It was just like, it was my own, like, it didn't really affect anything. So I basically just grew up as a fully sighted kid. My family, like, the only thing they ever did in relation to the low vision is they wouldn't let me play soccer in, like, a soccer league. And I was really mad about it, like, my whole life, because all my siblings got to and all my friends. But because there is, like, with my eye condition, retinal detachment is a very big factor. And we were always told that, I mean, I'm pretty sure this is common, but, like, if you get hit in the head, if I got hit in the head really hard with, like, a ball or something, my retina could detach. Yep. And that's why they never let me play soccer. But I was I fought them for years to play soccer. And I got to play for 2 years, and then I lost my sight. So it's kind of ironic, but at least I did it.
Was it because you got hit in the head?
Like, I did, but it was not related. No,
I was just because I'm clumsy. So the soccer didn't cause it.
No, the soccer did not cause it. I was just clumsy and got hit anyways. I'm not
a clumsy person. I can fully relate to all of that because same thing, because I'm at higher risk. Like, to be clear, anyone with retinas can have a retinal detachment. Oh, yeah. You know, but I'm at much higher risk because X, Y, and Z factors. So I was never allowed to do soccer, judo, you know, impact sports, nothing, you know, and it's not like, I mean, I've been hit in the head with basically every sports ball you can think of. I've been hit in the face with the basketballs, volleyballs, tennis balls, lacrosse balls, although it was like the school friendly gym lacrosse balls. So they're kind of bouncy, not solid.
Dodgeballs hit too. I can tell you that one.
Soccer was the
I'm
one
a very clumsy person.
Soccer was the one my parents banned, and there was a couple others. As I got older, I was like, I don't really feel comfortable doing baseball at this point.
Baseball terrified me because I couldn't look up. It was too bright for me to look up in the sky to look for the baseball, and I was so scared I was gonna get hit with that thing. I would hide behind taller people.
That's not hard. Jill's pretty short.
I'm like 5 feet. It's pretty easy.
I got hit so much with basketballs. I don't.
Like, yeah, those hurt.
In high school, everyone's favorite thing to do was like walk in the hallway, dribbling a basketball, throwing it, and it would like hit me in the head. Can you not? Can you like keep it in the gym?
Thank you. Yeah. But like that was the kind of the only thing my family ever did, like. That we were aware of is that if I got hit in the head too hard, I could lose my sight. But we were always told that if I saw stars, like little floaty stars, that's when we knew something was wrong. And that was never what I saw when I lost my sight. So we actually didn't know for like 2 or 3 weeks what was going on, because I saw like everything just kind of got really blurry instead of like stars. So we weren't very prepared for anything like that growing up. But when I lost my sight, the first thing my grandma had said to my mom was, does she have to go to an institution? Because, like, I don't know, decades ago, like, that was what happened, right? Like, you were sent to institution, but, like, that was her generation's, like, understanding of visual impairment, right? So that was the first thing my grandma thought is, like, okay, she's now fully blind. She has to go to an institution. We can't be here to help her. She has to go away. Like, I didn't know this until a couple years later, like afterwards. But that was not the case. We didn't have to do that. But like, it was a really big adjustment for me, of course, but also my family, because like, it wasn't really a high risk that I was going to lose my sight. It was completely random that it happened. It was not related to dodgeballs or soccer balls hitting me in the head. It was just like a random. There's nothing we could have done to prevent it. There's nothing we could have like been more prepared about. Like, it was just such a random possibility, I guess. And I was one of, you know, just happened. So like, they weren't used to guiding me, and they would forget that I couldn't walk with them anymore, like normally. So I'd be like standing by the track, and they would just like walk away. I didn't know where they were, and they forgot to guide me. And like just things like that, or like they, like I would ask them like where something is, and they'd hesitate because they didn't like, why are you asking? You know where it is. And then they would kind of it was a lot of adjustment, just kind of remembering that I now like no longer could see. But I think like the guiding situation was probably one of the bigger adjustments, because I would just walk and run and do whatever, like just like all my other siblings, and now I had to be guided. Especially at the beginning when I was just learning to use the cane, I hated it. I refused to use it. I kind of cheated with using it, actually. So they forgot to guide me a lot of the times, and that there's just like a really awkward situation with everyone when we'd remember. That was kind of like the big adjustment with my family, just like remembering, because for so much of my life, like I didn't need their help near as much as I did after I lost my sight. So it was a lot of just like remembering, and also just me remembering to ask for help when I didn't know where something was. And like, instead of like doing the awkward blind fumble around the house to find something, or like even my brother, like we would all like kind of like share the bathroom, brush our teeth before school and stuff. And like, I was in the bathroom and like, I kind of forgot to turn the, like, I'm not used to turning the light on anymore. And he like walked in 3 or 4 times, turning the light off and then back on, because he thought it was weird that I was in the dark brushing my teeth. Like, right. So there's like a whole just little adjustments, like day-to-day adjustments that we all had to get used to together, I guess.
What about you, Brody?
Yeah. My aunt, I didn't live with her. She was in Saskatchewan, so a couple of provinces away. So I only seen her from time to time. So we had a little bit of for her to deal with what she was dealing with and stuff. So we kind of knew what she was dealing with. So then when I, you know, was dealing with about the same thing, you know, slowly, and maybe not the exact same thing she dealt with. But yeah, so my mom definitely could relate, because she was really close to my Auntie Melody. And then, so she was okay with it. She wasn't really, you know, she was trying to keep me as calm as she could, you know, and going through different eye appointments and stuff, because they were trying to figure out first, like what was really going on, because we knew about this eye condition, but we didn't know it was like passed on hereditary, genetic and all that stuff. So they didn't really confirm that with my aunt's test results and stuff and genetic counseling. So we were going through the ropes and different eye tests and, where I saw red all day from all these pictures and stuff, and the different eye drops and whatever else that. So that was kind of the first like year and six, or the first 6 months of that year, in 2013. And then, you know, my stepdad, I wasn't living with my mom. She was in the same town in Poco, but it was a shock to him, because I was actually able to work on the construction site still as an electrician with just the one eye. So I was kind of using my touch, tactile, you know, being an electrician, you know, stripping wires and putting on plugs and switches. And I, you know, put up a whole electrical junction thing for a whole townhouse unit for in Maple Ridge, and, you know, half blind and stuff, and using my hands, and, you know, then mixing up the hots and blacks and grounds and stuff, and getting electrocuted a little more than I should be. So,
and then, yeah, that sounds a little bit scary.
Yes.
Yeah. So I could, you know, I was picturing this stuff, but then, so that was, so my stepdad is trying to, and I was working with my cousin. It was my stepdad's, brother's, company. So it was a smaller company. So we're with my cousins and my uncle and stuff. And so it was a shock, but it wasn't like, I guess I couldn't really see them that well, like, you know, at the start of it. So I couldn't really see like facial expressions and stuff, but definitely they were very supportive. I was like emotional and stuff, and they knew, you know, I just needed time and space and wherever else, and to do things a little slower. You know, they were helping me a little bit too much than I wanted, maybe, or, you know, that I had to. And then they were always there for me. I wasn't driving, so I was always getting rides and stuff that way. But they were always supportive of, you know, whatever I needed. You know, they were optimistic, thinking that, you know, something was going to happen, or, you know, the near ophthalmologist was going to have some medication that was going to help out at the time. But, you know, that wasn't the case. And then, you know, then learning more and more of my eye condition, and, you know, in different groups and with people with the same eye condition. So then, like, you know, it did definitely relate and stuff too. So that was good too. And then, like, my friends, I grew up here in Port Coquitlam for over 20 years. So I had a very good group of friends, and they were all really supportive of it. They were like a little apprehensive and stuff at first. Like, they didn't know how to exactly approach it. Like, they didn't know any like guiding skills, or, you know, sometimes, yeah, for sure, they like Jill too, like, they would just leave me and you know, I would have to fend for myself if they, you know, or because I wasn't using a cane for the first year or two. I didn't really, like, I should have, like, as an identifier thing. So I did get like a 4 foot one, and now I'm at a, you know, 60 inch one, because it's now, you know, it's a little bit more of my vision's gone than at the very start. So I, and to walk normal, I guess, too, I like using a longer cane, so that was okay. But the friends, they, you know, they were supportive in the way of, like, they would, you know, try and help me with the menus and identify this and that, because I had an iPhone at the time, but didn't really use voiceover, and I wasn't too familiar with any of the technology stuff like that. I was just like, I guess the acceptance thing was coming slowly but surely. But yeah, I know it's been challenging, but it's been good too, with the good moments, which I always remember, and, you know, the good, great people that I've met over the years in the different groups and stuff. And it's just, it's been really great, actually. So I don't have any regrets with it, actually. Like, it's the way my life was before I was blind. It wasn't really the greatest. And now it's kind of turned that around. And my family and my friends definitely know that. My girlfriend's been very, very supportive with me. And I just said, I don't know how you could deal with me and all that, but yeah, she does and stuff. So that's been great.
Well, my family did not have a lot of support in those early years, and didn't really know how to support me. So I feel like I had to come to terms with my vision loss. Or, well, there you go. I guess I do refer to it as vision loss or my blindness, and then help them to see that it wasn't quite so devastating. So I feel like I kind of went on my own journey and figured things out. And then once I was in a better adjusted place, I was able to help them to see that this isn't so terrible. And that, and like, you know.
Yeah. As we're like, my family is very supportive, but my friends weren't really, because they just didn't know how to handle it really. Actually, I had a couple of, like, really good childhood friends who basically just stopped talking to me, just because, like, look, I was going through so much at the time, and then, like, I just go from, like, being, like, a kid in a group who can see and, like, do everything they can, to, like, all of a sudden just, like, being there with a cane and, like, just having to do everything so different that they had a really hard time. Like, they didn't know how to support me, I guess, and, like, they just didn't know what to do, because it was like they've never been around a blind person before. And like, so, like, I don't know, we just kind of ended up losing a few friends because of it, which is really awful when you're a teenager in high school and, like, you have a good solid group of friends, and then they all just, like, they don't know what to do. And instead of, like, me being even having the chance to explain to them, like, what was going on, they kind of just, like, disappeared. But then I ended up making, like, a really good group of friends, like, other group of friends from high school, who, well, like, they were sisters of the other blind girl, so it kind of worked out. So they kind of knew what it was like in a way. So, like, they knew how to guide, and they weren't, like, weirded out when I would, like, fumble around or do something differently. So I kind of ended up making a different group of friends. But, like, again, like, I had my twin sister the whole time, so, like, she was always kind of there as a buffer in a way. So that kind of helped a lot, like, having my sister in the same grade. So
do you think now, looking back, that maybe the new friends you made were more, more solid friendships than those friends you had before?
Yeah, not all of them. Some of them were just, like, after high school, you kind of just, like, drift apart sort of thing. Right. But a few of them have definitely been really solid friends who've always stuck around. I actually ended up reconnecting with one of the childhood friends later on anyways. So that kind of all worked out in the end, sort of. Mm-hmm. But, like, I don't know, they kind of, like, there's one very solid friendship for sure out of that, like, I guess, newly found group, that we have been really, really close ever since. So it kind of, like, her being that good of a friend and, like, sticking around and, like, it's always being there kind of made up for all the other people who left. So
yeah,
it wasn't as big of a, like, I was really annoyed because, like, my sister had a really good big friend group, but then because of the vision loss I no longer did. So that was a big thing. Like, why don't I have a big friend group when she does? And like, I should be like her and blah, blah, blah. But then like, we just had, I had to realize that like, it just, that's not how it works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Brody, I'm curious, you must have found out who your real friends were. Like, were there some friendships that kind of just fizzled away and others that lasted after you lost your vision?
Yeah, I can definitely relate to that. I had probably like six good buddies of mine, and I was always the guy kind of, you know, making plans for the weekend in my, you know, 20s and stuff like that in our teenage years and wherever from high school and stuff. So I was always the guy kind of making sure everyone was kind of connected and we're always doing something or other, whatever it was. And then as, you know, the times of, you know, kind of rolled out each month and each week and stuff, my vision kind of slowly went to the way it is today. There was only maybe now three or four guys, you know, that would call me, or, you know, it was, you know, maybe the one guy, you know, that kind of was always texting me back or something, right? So, and then at the time too, like, we were all kind of, or, you know, I wasn't, of course, but, you know, they're, my friends are getting married and stuff and having, you know, at that time, so they were getting, you know, acquainted with that, and they were kind of busy with their own lives too, which I kind of had to realize. But, you know, if I needed to call anyone, I'm sure for sure they would always be at that call to answer it and stuff. And if I ever needed anything, they were definitely. But, you know, and it's just like, you know, just even with friends, and, you know, they, you know, get a girlfriend or something, then you can't get a hold of them anymore or something, right? Or whatever it is, right? So that did play a factor too. But yeah, I definitely could see that, you know, there was the key friends that were always kind of in contact. And then afterwards, you know, there was only the maybe two or three that kind of stay solid and, you know, wanted to help because, you know, maybe I needed a ride always here and there. And like, if I had to depend on that, you know, for an appointment or go grocery shopping or something, maybe they weren't always there. Right. So, and I kind of felt bad too, like, you know, always asking, but it was always offered, but, you know, I didn't want to always assume that that offer was always going to be there. Right. So, but other than that, yeah, I know it's been a change for sure, but I can't say now at the moment, you know, it's, the times change and years gone where it's, you know, we've kind of parted our ways too, right? It was all high school friends too and like that too. And like, even now, you know, I've made a lot more friends. And it's nice too to like, even like, we got hockey start next week and stuff. So it's nice to go into the locker room and, you know, just have, you know, the conversation on what happened during the, you know, the week or the weekend and stuff. And then, you know, being around people who have a visual, you know, kind of impairment or blindness, you know, it's, yeah, it's a lot more comfortable. So like, mm-hmm, you know, you don't have to, you know, there's not that kind of question mark or, you know, they're always, cause a lot of my friends too are always curious, like asking, what can you see? Or what can you, you know, this or that, or what can you, how do you do this? And it's like, I was okay with always explaining stuff and too, you know, but I wasn't always like up to like having to do it all the time. It's like, but yes, yeah,
yes, yeah,
yeah.
It actually helped a lot. Forming a friend group in like the blind or vision impaired community, it helped a lot. It does get really tired and kind of old having to explain everything over and over and over again to sighted people. Like, I didn't have the chance to go to any of the summer camps until right as I was losing my sight. So like, it was actually kind of nice for me to be able to, as I was losing it, or like shortly before, I had my first experience of a blind camp where there were so many different levels of visual impairment that I'm like, hey, like, there people are like me, and like, oh, they are fully blind. And like, then like a few months later, that was going to be my reality. So I think just having like being able to experience that for the first time, and then just like from those summer camps, forming a really solid friend group in the visual impaired community helped me out a lot because they got it. Like, they knew what I was struggling with at the time, and they like, here, try this, it might work better, right? So
yeah,
like, I have a lot of really, really good visually impaired friends, and I've formed really good friendships with sighted people like as I've been blind for quite a few years now, I guess like 10 years, I was really frustrated because it took me a long time to, it felt like a long time to make sighted friends again, because like, I have a few friends back in my hometown, but like, I'm here in the Lower Mainland most of the time, so I don't see them very much, so we kind of lose touch. But like at university, I've made like a few really solid sighted friends, I guess. And for whatever reason, it was really important for me to have sighted and blind friends. Just because like from being able to see and then not, and then losing that sighted friend group and now forming it again, kind of it all kind of got back, like got to where I wanted it to be with friends and like having a friend group and stuff. So it all kind of worked itself out, I guess.
I totally agree with making visually impaired friends was like hugely important for me too, as a teenager going through my own adjustment to my vision going away. And I was just about to call it vision loss again. But yeah, like going to camp when I was a teenager, still having, you know, being considered low vision. I didn't use a cane at that point either. And meeting friends that were totally blind and realizing that they were still normal and they were still smart and they were still interesting and talented and they still planned to go to university and they had all the same kind of goals and dreams that I did. And I didn't have to give that up. Like losing more vision wasn't going to mean losing more of my life. Because I think that's what I believed at, you know, when I was really young. So
same, yeah.
I say that to parents all the time, like, the best thing you can do for your child really is connect them with other kids like them, just to know that you're not alone. And you're so right, Brody. It's just like it's just so much easier to be around the blind friends, right?
It's like it's
so
refreshing almost.
It's like you can just be and you don't have to like... Yeah, you don't have to answer any
questions.
You don't
have to prove yourself to anyone that you can do things.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. No, I totally get that.
It was okay, though, too. Like, I've made some other friends. Like, now they only know me as a blind person, not before. Like, they so, like, I, you know, met someone from the Dragon Boy team. And, you know, he was, you know, he's very, you know, interested in what's going on. But he's not, like, my other friends are constantly asked. He just knows me for who I am now and not who I was before, kind of thing. So that was a little easier. Yeah. But, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good point, actually. I like that. Like, it's funny because, like, all of my friends in the Lower Mainland have only ever known me as being fully blind. They know that I could see before, but they never knew me then. So it's almost funny, like when I go back home to like Dawson, it's like I'm stepping back in time almost to like everyone knows me and like they knew when I could see. So it's almost like stepping back in time to my sighted days and then coming forward when I come back to the Lower Mainland to like my blind. It's so interesting that way. Yeah,
but that's an interesting point because for me, I feel like as the more confident I've become or the more comfortable with my blindness I've become, the easier it has been to make friends, sighted friends. You know, like, like becoming a parent, I was so insecure as a new parent and being the only blind parent really in my own circle and feeling like I had to prove that I could, that I deserved to be a parent or that I could be a parent, you know? And then as I kind of like figured out parenting and realized, I can do this. Then I became more confident. And then all of a sudden I started to make parent friends, right? With other parents. So I don't know. It's just, it's interesting as we evolve and feel differently about ourselves, what we put out to the world.
The things that the way that I would meet people or like the way that I would act in certain situations sighted is very different than how I do it being fully blind. Like sighted, I had my group of friends. I didn't really care. If I met new people, awesome, but I wasn't like purposely trying to meet new people. As we're like being blind and like again moving to the like to a big city and everything, I didn't really know a lot of people, and I'm like social enough to like throw myself into a conversation. But it's interesting to see how, even like looking back, like how different I feel like I was sighted versus not.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. So
wild.
Yeah.
Well, you guys, I mean, we could talk all night and we have. I have one final question, which is kind of a big one. And I'm curious to hear sort of the varying answers. So if you could get your sight back, if there was an operation, some magical cure that you could get your sight back, would you go for that?
Okay, so I have some thoughts about this because for all my life, I've been told that there was no cure, obviously in the early days, like my parents and I would inquire and ask if there was, and we were always told there wasn't. But recently, a couple months ago, I had my very last doctor's appointment at Children's Hospital with my eye doctor. And he told me, hey, there's this ophthalmologist who works in the adult world, and she is well known for doing kind of risky experimental surgeries. And I told her about your case, and she said she's willing to operate on you. And, you know, there's, I don't know enough information about this. I don't even know the success rate. I don't know what this procedure involves. I haven't seen this doctor yet, but basically there's a chance they could significantly improve my vision to the point where, like, you know, my vision, like I could even like maybe, you know, read print better than I can right now, but it would only last for about 30 years. And there's a pretty significant chance that my vision would get worse. And it's a really big decision, but for me, I think I really want to have this surgery and procedure done, just because I know I'm the type of person who, if I don't do this, I'll keep thinking, what if it's meant to happen? And I do think that things kind of happen for a reason. And I think that this opportunity was presented to me because it's something that, you know, I was meant to know about and meant to do. And I just don't want to be left wondering. And, you know, if I do end up losing my vision, like completely, and if my vision gets worse, then I might be sad in the beginning, but I have a support system. I can call Jill at 3 a.m. and cry about my problems. But yeah, so like, I think either way, if my vision improves, yay. If it gets worse, then, you know, I have a support system and I know I'll be okay.
Cool.
Yeah. For me, being like, from going, like, I have still low vision, but I had very, very good sight compared to what I have now. Like, so from going from being able to see quite well to nothing, like, I've been in both quote unquote worlds. And I've adjusted very, very well in the last 10 years. I'm very, very proud of how far I've come with it all. Whether it's university, learning to be independent, moving to a big city, like, et cetera, et cetera. I'm very proud of all of that. But it honestly, it comes down to that. I miss it. I miss being able to see the sunlight, and I miss being able to see people. I miss being able to see like nature, and I miss seeing, phantom lights have colors, but like real colors. Mm-hmm. And I just like, it's going to sound kind of vain, but I even just miss seeing my face in a mirror, that, like just little things like that. I miss seeing, like, I think it's just the day-to-day, everyday things I miss seeing. But so I would say yes to getting a surgery. However, I would be perfectly happy, and I would love to even go back to the sight that I had. I don't want, like, because if I went back, or if I got a surgery and had perfect vision, that would be just one more huge adjustment that I have to go through again. And I've already done this once, right? Like, and it was a lot to go through to adjust to seeing everything to seeing literally nothing within 6 months. That was a huge adjustment. And I don't really want to go through that again if I can help it. So, like, if I go back to the site that I had before, it wouldn't be as much of an adjustment, mm-hmm. because I have that visual memory. It would pretty much be like, I don't need to grab a cane anymore. Oh, yeah. Like, that would be pretty much it in theory. So, as we're, like, going back, like, if I had full perfect vision, that'd be awesome, but I've never known how to see out of both eyes, right? So I would just be happy getting a surgery that would give me the sight back that I had before.
Yeah, you just want what you've lost.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, because mm-hmm. I just, like I said, simply just miss seeing everyday things. So
what about you, Brody?
There is a couple I don't know if it's surgeries, but there's gene therapy and there's a drug called Debenone you can take. But it's only in the first year, or I think the first 3 years, you should be taking this stuff. And I didn't take the chance. I know a fellow that did, and a couple other people that did take the Debenone and stuff and the supplement. But, you know, they didn't see any results right away. And obviously, every one of us are individually different. And, you know, one thing worked better for others than another thing could. So I didn't take that avenue. I didn't go that down that route. It's a gene and therapy injections. It's all kind of experimental and stuff, right? So it's, you know, and then I was wanting to, you know, when I first started losing my eyesight, it was like, oh yeah, 10 years from now, there'll for sure be some bionic eye and I'm definitely going to get that. I'll be seeing like Terminator, no problem, right? So I got two more years, so I'll be waiting for Neuralink or something, right? Or whatever it was, but
it was actually something in the process.
Yes, right? So, yeah. You know, but then, I was saying to myself, so, you know, then through with technology advancements with medicine and whatever it is, and, like, I just don't want anything for, you know, any side effects or anything like that. And, you know, if there's, like, 100 people that have had it for, you know, a certain amount of years and stuff, sure. But I don't, you know, but if there is definitely some kind of surgery, because it's my optic nerve that's the issue, not my eyes or brain, right? So if there is something, for sure, I would definitely take it. You know, it'd be good to, you know, I'm in the process of kind of getting a change in my career, right? I was more of a hands-on guy, and I still can be, right? But I have to do things a little differently. So, you know, and then now having to get used to the computer skills and stuff like that. So, you know, it'd be good to, you know, get back in the workforce and stuff and kind of get those things back, you know, and I could still see things, you know, in a different way, but, you know, it is what it is. But if there was some kind of opportunity, and there was a, for sure, you know, a good percentage of me getting most of my vision back and then it staying even stable for 10 or 20 years, for sure, I'd definitely do it.
What about you, Randy?
I'm not sure at the moment. To my knowledge, there is no such surgery at this point to do anything for me because, like I mentioned before, it's pointy-shaped eyeballs and really thin stretched retinas. You know, they can't... I often get people, you know, well-meaning people of, you know, the public kind of, oh, have you heard of laser eye surgery? yes, they can't laser more layers of tissue onto my retina. So, you know, if I were to have a detachment, there's definitely a surgery to fix that detachment, which I would absolutely be taking. That's not a guarantee that the vision wouldn't... you know, just because they fix the detachment doesn't mean you come out with the same level of vision you went in. Yeah. So
that's true.
I think it's hard to say because I think if it was like, it would depend on a lot of information, right? If it was like a 50-50 shot on whether it improves or makes my vision worse at this point, I probably wouldn't do anything right now, but because I obviously don't want to, you know, lose any vision that I do have. You know, as my mom said a lot, you know, having, you know, 2% of vision is a lot more than having 0% or 1%. You know, a little vision is worth a lot compared to no vision, you know, kind of what Jill was describing too, you know, when she's saying like, oh, you know, I can see so well, you know, as far as, you know, the spectrum goes.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You have so much more in comparison to nothing, but I often feel like I'm kind of straddling a wall. You know, I have 1 foot in the blind world, 1 foot in the sighted world. I'm, for most intents and purposes, not sighted enough for the sighted world, but I'm also in a lot of ways not blind enough to count among the blind world. You know, not with my friends and personal relationship like that, but for, you know, requirements for grants, scholarships, government funding, even to play blind sports. I mostly don't qualify to play at a more than recreational level. Mm-hmm. So it limits me.
Which
that
is
way.
Absolutely ludicrous, but that's another story.
It's a bit ironic.
Yeah.
I always went in with all this, so I was always told there's nothing they can do because mine is Brody is an optic nerve issue now, no longer a retinal issue. Because that, you know, fixed itself but lost the vision. So it was kind of ironic. But with all these there's always this talk of I don't know, bionic eyes and all these surgeries and medication and brain implant chip things and whatever. There's all these things people talk about. But with my entire eye experience, vision loss experience and everything, my mom had always told me no expectations, no disappointments. So I always went into an eye checkup with no expectations. So if there was an eye surgery, I wasn't disappointed. And that's also how I'm viewing these potential, like, well, if there's any surgeries one day to fix my optic nerves, I don't want to get my hopes up and then have it not work. And then, like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't want to risk that emotional upheaval again. Mm-hmm. So like with having no expectations, no disappointments, that helps me, like, going in, like, reading about all these eye surgeries and, like, sure, if it happens, it happens. And if it's safe and it's a success rate and I'm not, like, it's not going to make anything worse, because yes, I have phantom lights and they're weird and annoying, but it's still technically something. And they're kind of weird and fun. But like, I don't even want to lose those if the surgery would go wrong, right? So, like, I'm not getting my hopes about any surgeries. And, like, throughout all of my eye stuff, like, everyone's like, oh, like, I believe you'll get your sight back one day. You'll get it back. I'm like, I am not even going to talk to you about this right now, because I'm adjusting to this level of vision that I don't even have, like, the brain power and energy to think about getting it back. But now that it's been 10 years and I've dealt with it and adjusted, like, it's definitely a possibility, but I'm almost scared to get my hopes up. So that's why there's the no expectations, no disappointments thing I got going on.
I think that's definitely a kind of a good way to look at it. Yeah, you can't really be disappointed if you don't get your hopes up, because my vision is expected to get worse. I mean, that's not guaranteed it will get worse, but based on my mom as our main example, it will probably get worse. I'm kind of set up in my head for that. I obviously expect at the time it'll be an emotional adjustment, regardless of no matter how prepared you are for it, I don't think you can really prepare for it. So I think later in life, if my vision did get significantly worse, and there was something we could do about it, then I would probably look into something. Another example too is, like, my mom, she's been blind in her left eye, right eye. You're confusing me, Jill, because I think you have
I know I'm the opposite of your mom.
But anyways, my mom's been blind in one eye for many years. People often ask her if there was some kind of, like, eye transplant, which they can't do yet because your optic nerve connects to your brain and that's kind of an issue. If there was something, would she go for it? And she always was kind of like, well, you know, that blind eye has no, it can't get any worse. So sure, might as well try it. Right. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think it would depend on, you know, the procedure itself, the likelihood of it getting better, worse, or nothing changing, and the stage I am at with my vision at that point. So right now, would I jump on something? Probably not, but maybe. And then later in life, more the likelihood percentage kind of goes up. So
what about you, Sean?
Yeah, I lean more towards no, I probably wouldn't. And I mean, I don't think I would have had the life that I have had if I wasn't blind. I don't think I would be the person that I am. I don't know how I could stay involved with Blind Beginnings in the role that I have if I was all of a sudden sighted. And I guess I feel like I have gained more than I have missed out on. Once I adapted, once I adjusted and accepted and began to sort of, like, I actually see my blindness as a gift. And I think because of it, I'm changing the world, maybe one perception at a time, one person at a time, but in my own small way. But that, maybe that's my purpose. That's what I'm supposed to do. So I wish I could see my son, you know, the expression on his face, like him looking at me like that, you know, just, mm-hmm. And I'm sure as he gets older, if he becomes, you know, really athletic or something, watching him score a goal or those kinds of things, like, but, and yeah, there's things I miss out on, of course. And there's moments when I wish I could see. You know, it's not like it's always just awesome and great. It isn't. And it can be really hard, but then I've learned so much through those challenges. So I don't know. I don't pay attention to advances in medicine, and I'm not part of, you know, I delete the emails from the Foundation Fighting Blindness. I don't like their philosophy. I just delete them. I don't care. I don't stay up on that. I'm not you know, my parents told me that when they were told of my eye condition, they were told don't expect a cure in her lifetime. And I've heard different things since then. I know other people are kind of hoping and waiting, but I've just always thought there won't be one, and I've just gotten on with things. And yeah, I don't know. So it's, I mean, I, you know, I can't swear I never would. Maybe if the opportunity was presented to me, I'd be looking at it differently. It never has been. I'm not looking for it. And
there's so many factors that go into it.
There is. And like Nika, most of the time, I don't even think about the fact that I'm blind. It's not until it's usually a stranger that interacts with me in the world in a way that reminds me, you know, like, and that bothers me, but it's more about how they view blindness that bothers me. It's not that I can't actually see. Yeah, the other person's
perception.
Yeah,
exactly. So I'm just trying to educate, right? Even through this podcast, we're trying to educate people about blindness, because if we can change their perceptions and show them that we are intelligent, capable people, blind or not, then maybe it won't be as hard to live in a sighted world, right? Mm-hmm. So...
Yeah. I think that's a good point, because earlier too, in you had mentioned kind of in passing, trying to not to be so devastated, or your family was trying not to potentially be devastated, you know, with your vision loss eventually. And I think that's often a perception people, like the general public, will have, you know, if they've had no personal interaction with somebody with bad vision. I've had a couple of like coworker conversations where they were like, oh, if I lost my vision tomorrow, I don't know what I would do. My life would just be over. And I'm like, no, I'm pretty sure you'd adapt. That would just be it. I couldn't, you know, it was a little bit dramatic, but, you know, when parents potentially are told like, hey, your newborn child is, or is going to be blind, you know, they might, you know, kind of, it's kind of like a shock and a hit to a blow to the system, and you know, and probably have to kind of get over that first inclination of devastation for the potential future. And I think, you know, as you were saying, like, yeah, trying to share and educate and you know, make other people aware it's not this huge devastating thing. It's not the end of their life and their independence and the things they can do. And to quote a fairly well-known song amongst us by a fairly well-known artist, Terry Kelly, we are trying to, you know, changing what it means to be blind.
Yes. And on that note, I feel like we really have, like, if our listeners are still with us, thank you for staying with us, because this has been a very long conversation that we've had to break up into multiple podcasts. But thank you so much to all of you for being here tonight for this conversation. I think it's been very, very interesting, and hopefully has opened people's eyes to the diversity of, and the difference between, you know, those of us who are born blind or visually impaired, and those of us who lose our vision somewhere along the way, and those of us that are hybrids.
That's my favorite term, Sean. Blind Beginnings is officially going to trademark that term.
Yeah, we are.
Awesome.
I'm adopting it.
Cool. So thank you to all of you for being here.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
And remember, you can send us an email at limitless@blindbeginnings.ca with topic ideas or questions for our Ask Abby feature, where Blind Beginnings youth answer your questions about blindness and visual impairment. Thank you to those of you who've already submitted your questions. We just need a few more, and then we'll run another one of those episodes. This has been Limitless, the Blind Beginnings podcast. I'm your host, Sean Marcellet, and please join us again next time. This podcast has been brought to you by PCI Developments, one of our corporate sponsors of our Blind Beginnings Harvesting Hope Gala. Find them online at www.pci-group.com. Tickets to the Blind Beginnings Harvesting Hope online gala are now on sale. The gala will take place on October 17th, 2020 at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Tickets are $30. If you're interested in purchasing a ticket and helping support Blind Beginnings and the work we do, visit our website for more information at www.blindbeginnings.ca.